Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, and today we have a very special guest. Before I introduce her, though, I'm going to show you a very special video clip. Isn't she incredible? So now I'm going to introduce Meryl Schur, who is an opera singer, and she's got some very special missions for the world that she's going to share with us, and a very special project that I hope so many of you will get involved with. So welcome, Meryl.
Thank you, Hillary. I'm so happy to be here. This is so exciting. And I really appreciate the opportunity to share what I'm up to and what my dream and vision for the world is. It's been around and I'm just excited. This is so great. Thank you so much.
Yes. So, all right. So we're gonna do something that we don't normally do, which is we're gonna talk about Meryl's project and passion at the beginning so that all of you can spread the word and get this out. So it's kind of a two-part dream. And you want to say both parts?
Sure, let's jump right in. So I've been singing opera since I was 13. Okay, I've had a full life of singing opera. I went to Juilliard during high school. I went to Oberlin. So this has been inside my life, my whole life pretty much, right? And there's something that I still have not achieved. So I'm 68 and still feel great.
Oh my God. Oh, stop.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. So I never sang at the Met. And most of my life, people always said, oh, you're going to sing at the Met. You've got an international career coming, world class. And they likened me to some very famous opera singers.
Now, Meryl, for people who aren't opera buffs, when you say the Met, you're referring to?
Yes, the Metropolitan Opera here in New York City. I live in New York City. I've been here since 1978, and I'm basically pursuing an opera career for most of my life. Now, have I done other things? Yes. And most artists have different jobs to pursue what their passion is or what they're up to, right? What, in order to pay for your lessons and your coachings and whatever else you're up to, you, whatever you're committed to doing inside your growth and development. So I worked as an executive assistant for over 40 years, and it helped support my singing. And during that course of time,
Let's go back to the dream, because we've gotten lost as to what, what our product
is. I'm sorry.
I'm here to keep her back on target. So go ahead.
Get me back on target. Okay, so here's the dream.
So the dream is to get to the Met.
My dream is to sing on the stage of the Met with orchestra. And that is not usually done for someone at my age. It doesn't usually happen. And there, I have this idea for a project. And what it looks like is a fundraiser for the Met. It looks like having an MC who has a name in the opera world, who would be like a draw and have people want to come, and then have a group of singers who either have sung at the Met already, had a big career around the world, and can still sing and want to come back and raise money for the Met. And then a group of singers like me. So singers like me would be the, you know, gee, she should have sung at the Met. She's got this great talent. I mean, I had somebody see a performance I did at the end of January, and he sends me an email after watching it going, why aren't you famous? And I'm like, oh, that's nice of you. I'm like, I was so touched. And, you know, when you say you're an opera singer, people go, whatever. You know, like some people like opera, some people don't. And what I found is in performing, I can touch people sometimes that they cry and they say, I had no idea. I didn't know. And then they go, gee, maybe I do like opera. Maybe I should explore opera more, because it was like, I know a lot of people go, ooh, opera, you know, like no interest. And part of my dream, part of my vision is that people see what's available, what's there, that they could be really touched by being live at an opera. You know, it's something different when you watch something live stream, or which I've been doing now. I've been doing live and live stream performances, really to give young singers opportunities to perform and to give myself an opportunity to get up and sing.
So Meryl, let's just recap the project and the dream. So it sounds like it's threefold. One is to raise money for the arts in general, because they need funding. So this would be to raise money for the Met, which is helps everybody. That's a great thing. The second is for you to be able, for you to be able to sing on the stage with an orchestra at the Met. And then the third is to bring people to the opera who think they don't like it. I mean, I've been to the opera. There were times when I didn't know the story and it was kind of like, whatever. There were times when I did, somebody was teaching me the story and then it was more exciting. So I think there's different ways to be at the opera, but I think that's your third tier of your project goal dream is to have more people get to the opera, have more people appreciate the opera, and not just put their, as my father would say, put their nose up that they don't like it without really knowing what it is. So would you say those are your three goals right now?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So what we're looking for, this is why we're putting this at the beginning of the interview, is we're looking for an MC who's can draw people to the event. We're looking for opera singers who are interested in raising money for the opera. Maybe they've already sang there before. We're looking for people maybe like Meryl, whose dream is to also sing at the Met. And wouldn't that be exciting? Obviously, you need to establish the program. You need to have the people. And then we would need people to publicize it. We would need to spread the word. So anybody who's an opera fan, anybody who's up to have Meryl, you know, realize her dream, and I won't say save the opera, but save the opera in a way that we really get more people interested in it. you know, reach out to Meryl, and we'll post this again later at her website or at her email, Meryl, Meryl.sher@verizon.net, or her phone number. And again, we'll have this in the notes, 917-797-3799, and reach out to Meryl and let's make this thing happen. Wouldn't that be so cool? That would be so cool.
Oh my God. Thank you. Yeah. You know, it's people think, well, it's the Metropolitan Opera. They have enough money. Well, there are a lot of individual donors and patrons and, you know, they pay for productions. People donate money in very different amounts. I mean, this is the kind of production that would require a fair amount of fundraising, right? So we have the Met has the lighting, the staging, the ushers. You know, there's so many particles that are needed. And to be able to raise a lot of money so that there's something left over after the performance, right? And that also people volunteer. Like, I volunteer all the time. I do things pro bono. I sing at senior centers now. And basically the money I get, I pay my pianist. And I'm going to share a little something. I hope he's okay with this. So my pianist is someone who worked at the Metropolitan Opera. And he played for Pavarotti, and he played for Roberta Peters. He played for all the famous singers of years gone by. And it's like a huge honor for me to be working with this gentleman named William Hicks. And he actually said something to me like a couple of months ago. He said, you know, if I knew you 30 years ago, you would have had a career. And that to me was like, oh my God, you know, to come from somebody like him, you know, it really meant a lot to me to hear something like that. I had people like Placido Domingo and James McCracken and Leonie Riesenek all say to me things like, you have a voice we hear seldom in a lifetime. And that kind of statement, people just don't say that. You know, there's got to be something behind it. So,
Meryl, let me ask you a question.
Sorry, I got a little emotional there.
we love emotions. This is called getting real with Hillary. So let's get real. So yeah, no, that's very moving. So I had a piano teacher. This was years ago, and he was very, very, very talented. And yet, there he was teaching at the Westport School of Music, and he never made it. And I, you know, I think I asked him once, why didn't you make it? And he goes, well, the people that made it, you know, were just luckier than I or something. You know, that's what he said. So my question to you is, why do you think you didn't make it? And I know we covered a couple things. I don't know if any of them were the reason. You may not know the reason, but with all the talent, you know, that you have, what do you think it was?
Well, of course, I have hypotheses. The main one that shows up for me is over the years, I've had weight issues where I, at one point, weighed 280 pounds. And I have tried pretty much every possible weight loss program in my life. And every time I would lose any substantial, I'm talking, you know, 50, 60, 100 pounds, every time I'd lose weight, it would affect my technique. So I would lose musculature. I would lose the support that when you sing repertoire like Wagner and Strauss and Big Puccini and Verdi, you know, and Beethoven, you know, I sang Fidelio, you know, in those days, you need support. You know, people always say, you know, it's not over till the fat lady sings. Well, I was one of those. But my voice was always really big. It was just always big. It always had a lot of cut to go over the big orchestras. And
so did you ever think of not losing the weight to keep the voice, or you didn't know that that was going to happen?
Well, over time, you know, I realized that this was happening, you know, over and over again.
Oh.
Broken record, you know, like just every program, I'd lose weight, then I'd gain it back. Often I'd gain more back. I've done things like I did the gastric lap band procedure and I lost 80 pounds and I still have most of that off. You know, it's pretty much, I've been at a same weight for a long time, but a couple of years ago, I dropped 35 pounds. It affected me. So this is how I can measure and notice that it happens. And then mm-hmm. people would not know what to do with me. I went to so many voice teachers. Can you help me? Can you get my voice consistent? Because what would happen is I'd be great at performing, but I wasn't so great at auditioning. And so that's the second reason that I think I didn't have what I could potentially have had, is that I didn't know how to keep my technique consistent with the fluctuating weight. And in an audition, it can be different than being on a stage and performing, because people would come and hear me perform and they would go, oh my God, you know, why aren't you at the Met? I would get that so many times. Why aren't you at the Met? And, you know, like there's how many, you can't really answer that. And sometimes it is, you meet someone, you're in the right place at the right time. You know, you just never know what can open a door. So,
happen? What would happen in the audition that was different than a performance? Like, would you just get nervous
sometimes it was different reasons. Yeah. And I mean, by the way, I took classes on how to audition, you know, I did everything I could to, you know, anyway,
you weren't in a little room, right? I mean, I can imagine on stage when you're...
Hillary, you just hit on something very important. So auditions could be held in a tiny room, in a tiny space. And you can't hear what a big voice really does until it's in a big space. So I would be doing these auditions and people wouldn't know what to do with me. It was like... like, for instance, I'll give you an example. I was auditioning in Leipzig at the Opera House. So I speak German. I study German so that I could go to Germany and work in Germany.
Leipzig is in
Germany. And I was practicing with the pianist in the practice room. And he said, well, what are you going to sing? And I said, I don't know, it was either Brunhilde, the end of the immolation scene, or the Liebestod, or Turandot. I also sang the aria from Turandot. And he goes, oh, I don't know, I think you should sing Dich Teure Halle. I said, well, I haven't sung that now in about 8 or 10 years. I did that when I was younger. And he wanted me to sing that. So I went on the stage and sang Dich Teure Halle. Leipzig is a big house. And he said to me after, oh,
like bad idea.
He said, oh, you really do have the Brunhilde voice. You know, it's like, anyway, and for people who don't know about Brunhilde, you know, the caricatures, the cartoons where you see the woman with the horns and the spear and the breastplate, that's Brunhilde. Right. Just thought I'd give a little commentary about Brunhilde. Anyway.
do that again. I'm going to take myself out so we can see all the movements. Okay, do it again.
Okay. So people want to know, if you want to know who Brunhilde is, you know, you'll see these cartoons and pictures and, oh, there's even commercials of Wagnerian singers. Brunhilde is the woman with the horn, you know, the hat, the helmet that has two horns on the helmet with a spear and the breastplate, you know, like a Viking. She was a Viking god, right? So that's Brunhilde. That's the role that I did, Die Walküre, in two small performances.
Does she have the braids too? The braids
yeah,
too?
Yeah, sometimes. And she's usually blonde. So, you know, she could have. But you know, now they're doing it all. Every production is different. You can be a brunette or a redhead now. You could, you know, like everything is different. She may not have the helmet or the spear, but she's still a god, right? She's still, the daughter of a god. She's the god in Valhalla. You know, I mean, this is, you know, Vikings. Yeah. So
in
Turandot,
retrospect,
you know,
if you had done Brunhilde, do you think it would have been different on that one audition?
Well, I sang Die Walküre. Oh, you mean at that one audition? Yes.
Yeah.
I think if I had sung the last like 10 minutes of the immolation scene, because the immolation scene is almost 20 minutes long, and it's at the end of the opera, and she jumps into the fire. And anyway, it's a long story. if you want to know, you could look at the Ring of the Nibelungens. That's where it comes from. And it's the fourth opera in the Ring. Anyway, so I think if I had sung that, they would have had a completely different experience. And like, for instance, I sang for an agent in Leipzig while I was there. And he literally picked up the phone. I sang the Turandot aria. And I had sung for him years before, and I sang Die Walküre. And when he asked me what I was singing, he says, oh, let's hear the Turandot. So I sang it. And he literally picked up the phone to call an intendant, which is like a general manager in a German opera house. Unfortunately, that intendant was having quadruple bypass surgery and wasn't around to hear me. But, you know, this is the kind of stuff that happens, right?
Right.
And I wasn't living there then. I was only there for like 2 months auditioning and stuff. And, but you just never know when someone's going to hear you and hear really what is so about your voice, what makes you special. Because, you know, now we have this great singer, Lisa Davidson. I'm going to plug her because she's 36 and she is amazing. She's the real deal. So if you have a chance and you're interested in hearing great opera the way it should be sung with a great voice, I mean, she reminds me of me when I was that age, right? Like, I'm really serious. And she, by the way, she's 6 feet tall. She's like a voice. She is, and it has me. Oh, by the way, I'm going tonight, Tuesday night, March 12th, I am going to the Met to hear her do La Forza del Destino. And I'm very excited. I heard her at Carnegie Hall, and I heard her do a solo concert at the Met in the fall, and I bought tickets right away. Like, I kind of want to say I'm a little bit of a groupie. She's phenomenal, just phenomenal. So,
hey,
you know,
I have an idea.
Yes, what?
So your piano player, William Hicks, knows a lot of people because he played for them. And now if Lisa Davidson knows you, let's just say, she will tonight. She could be the star that you were talking about, and William Hicks could be the one that knows the famous people. So I'm already creating this event for you. So come on.
I appreciate that. There's definitely
about these.
Okay. Yeah. So right. What else can I say? Okay. I would say that, you know, one thing I'm going to put it in right now because I really want people to hear. I live my life inside of sort of a commitment or a vision, a mission for the world. And it's what I see possible is joy and passion and connecting humanity through music, allowing our hearts to sing, empowered and thriving. And it kind of generates me to be out in the world bringing that. You know, being that when I meet people, when I want to bring this. This is, you know, at 68 now, you know, you look at what are you committed to? What kind of legacy do you want to leave? You know, and I see that this is part of it. This is part of it. And, you know, I feel like if people can be unstoppable, like really pursue your passion, pursue your dream. And it doesn't matter what your age is, really, like it doesn't matter. You could still go for it. Be unstoppable. You know, Hillary, I know that I wanted to talk. I talked a little bit about my weight and that, how it affected me, but something happened in the end of 2014. And I got sick. So, you know, I've had all these things around my weight. I got sick. I went away for a week and came back with 3 weeks later, enormous pain in my fingers, my joints, my wrist. I'm like, what is this? It's so painful. So I go to the doctor and they send me to a rheumatologist and they run all these tests. And what I had was high levels of inflammation. But they tested me for things like rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and fibromyalgia, and the list went on. And they never tested me. Oh, they also tested me for something that was happening in the Caribbean, which is where I was, called chikungunya. And it manifests like this pain that a lot of people have with rheumatoid arthritis. So they started treating me with steroids and medications, and they would do this and do that and try this and try that. It didn't go away. So I was working as an executive assistant in corporate America investment banking, and I ended up having to take a leave because I couldn't write well, I couldn't type well, I couldn't, you know, open a water bottle, I couldn't, you know, just dry myself off, getting out of the shower, opening the doorknob, you know, like all of this. And eventually it just passed all, it spread all through my body. So my whole body was in pain. And this was a year that I went to work every day and I was in pain every day. And finally I had to take a leave. And I went to a place in California, Santa Rosa, California, called True North Health Center. And it was recommended to me. People who had gone there and had some great results. And they work a lot with people with autoimmune disease and all different kinds of things to get healthier. And basically, it's a medically supervised water fasting place. And I water fasted for 25 days. I was there for 7 weeks. And I came home, I was detoxed, but I didn't get rid of the pain. So my chiropractor, who I adore, sent me to a homeopath naturopath from Santa Fe, who comes to New York every 2 to 3 months. And she knew right away. She looked at my eyes. She did a blood test. She says, you have parasites. I went, parasites? And not one doctor had, you know, tested me for it. She put me on her protocol. And within like 4 or 6 weeks, no pain, gone. So
what was their
I'm telling you, my friends were. Well, it's a lot. But the first thing was 8 days of milk, either raw goat's milk or organic grass-fed whole milk. 8 days. So after doing water for 25 days, 8 days on milk. First of all, I hate milk, but you do anything when you're sick, you do what you need to do, right? That's that be unstoppable thing. And I did it. And then she had me on a lot of different natural homeopathic supplements. And that was that, you know, I'm forever grateful. I noticed the places where I'm grateful. Because, Hillary, I have a great life. I have a great life. I don't, you know, I don't work in corporate America anymore. I'm singing. I'm performing. I'm, you know, doing things that light me up. That whole thing had me become much more open to more natural ways to heal, alternative ways. So I found a supplement that helps to activate your cells. And I did that. And the first result was I had dislocated my shoulder. The first result was I didn't have any pain in my shoulder anymore. But the second bigger result was one of the things that happened with those parasite things is it caused something called a bamboo node on my vocal cords. Different than other nodes. You know, people, singers sometimes talk about they get nodes. This is a different one that comes from this autoimmune parasite thing. And the cellular, I went to the ear, nose, and throat doctor, who's like an opera singer. You know, he specializes in opera singers. And he said to me, they're not there anymore. Go sing opera. I never thought I'd sing again. Forget about opera.
You mean the nodes weren't there?
The nodes were gone. Yeah. It looks just, you know, like what a bamboo looks like. They're the green and they have those little brown, yellow things that stick out of the bamboo. Those were on my cords. Mm. So I had trouble talking. And, you know, when you're working in corporate America and you're on the phone all day long, your cords are not approximate. They weren't approximating. They weren't vibrating. They weren't healthy. So I really thought I'd never sing again.
And what helped that? That was the naturopathic protocol,
The cellular activators. And then subsequently in August of 2022, I started wearing what we call a stem cell activation patches that uses phototherapy, the light from our bodies, to regenerate and help your stem cells. So you feel better, you feel more energy, more vitality. It's kind of youthening. You kind of feel youthen, you know? And it's my word, youthen. And there are different patches for different things. And after working with the homeopath naturopath, I really am now open to what's possible for human beings to feel better, look better, you know, have less health issues. So, I think that, people can call me, you know, reach out to me on anything. My big thing is obviously singing. But I think it's important that people know that things exist. So I like to open the door. I like to, you know, share with people what's possible. I think that my life has become much more giving back, you know.
Yeah. So, all right, we're about to go to a commercial break. But I just want to say, I guess there was a silver lining in that parasite whole year and a half, that was that it opened you up. I mean, would you say that it opened you up to new medical possibilities? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my dad was a doctor.
Okay.
My dad was a doctor. I grew up with Western medicine, and it was all about take this medic, which is what I did. And it didn't help me. Mm-hmm. It did not take away all of that. And so this is now, you know, it's a part of my life and it's part of my past. And now I get to really bring this to others, bring joy, bring it to others.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. What I just keep thinking, what was it in the Caribbean that gave you the parasite? Was it the food? Like, do you know how you get that?
I don't know. I think it can come food. I think it can come water. I think it can come anything. Mm-hmm. But you know, the place where I was.
Yeah. Do you know anyone else who got it? Yeah.
No, I was there just with a friend, and I got it. It could be anything. It really could. Yeah. And I don't know what the actual cause. I can't pinpoint it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. We're glad you recovered. And we will be right back after our commercial break.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
So thank you, as always, to our sponsors, Kikori. If you want to reach out and bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, go to kikoriapp.com. You can ask for Kendra or you can ask for Haley, and they will give you a demo. It really makes a difference with our children, with our businesses, with our teams, and it really brings connection and socialization, which, you know, during COVID, that was a little missing. So very important. Definitely contact them. And then if you saw my commercial, what I'm about is that people, really get to live lives that they love. Sometimes, at least for me, I wasn't free to say things. I would think a lot, but they didn't come out of my mouth and I was kind of trapped. So my book, Real Talk, and you could go to realtalkwithhillary.com and find out more about it. It has the Getting Real Process, which has us take an area of our life that's really important to us, but we feel a little stuck and not free to speak. And by the end of those 4 to 6 weeks of my course, you are free. So go to that, or you can reach me at Hillary@gettingrealwithhillary.com. That's with 1L, and we'll have a conversation. And I the people that I've worked with, they are doing things that they never would have done before. They're speaking up. One girl was so shy, she just wouldn't speak. And now she's speaking up to people, to her family, and she's like, oh, I can't believe this is me. So it really does work. So get in touch, and we will now bring our special guest, Meryl Schur, back for more exciting conversation. Welcome back, Meryl. Hello.
Thanks, Hillary. Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
I
want to go back to when you were accepted to Juilliard in high school. I didn't know that they did that. Yeah. Like, how did that come about? That's amazing. Well, do they still do that today?
Yes, they do. It's the Juilliard pre-college division, and you could be any age, you know, but for singing, most of the time it didn't start till like your freshman year of high school. But you would see kids running around with their instruments from all over on a Saturday. So I would go in to New York City from where I lived in the suburbs. And, how I got there was, so when I was growing up, I don't know how many people take piano lessons or play the clarinet or play whatever instrument, right? What'd you play?
Piano, flute, and harp. My mother was a music teacher, and she played in the symphony.
Oh my God.
For like 80 years, my mother played in the symphony. Yeah.
My God. I had no idea. God. And I met your mother. Oh my God. I had no idea. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So, so my mother played the clarinet. I played the clarinet. My sister played the clarinet. So we were in, band and orchestra, and I was in chorus. And, but my piano teacher
suburb,
said to my
Meryl. Where did you grow up?
I lived in New City, New York. And okay. I went to Clarkstown. I went to Clarkstown High School.
So and Westchester? So is that Westchester or
it's in Rockland. It's Rockland County.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Or across from Westchester. Right. Yeah, so I was taking piano lessons and I played the clarinet. All right. And my piano teacher said to my parents, you know, you should really give her voice lessons. She sings along while she's playing the piano and she has a voice. So she sends me to this woman in New City, and she really quickly said, oh no, I can't teach you. We need to get you a real teacher. A real teacher. So I find a soprano.
Were you supposed
in
to be?
Were
you,
and yes.
Wait. Were you supposed to be singing at your piano lessons, or you just couldn't help yourself?
No.
What'd you
I
say?
Help myself, I guess.
No.
I don't really remember that, but I remember I was not supposed to. It was supposed to be just the piano. So somehow, I guess,
yeah.
Because that's what my parents told me that the teacher said to them. All right. So the first teacher sends me to a soprano who teaches in West Nyack. So I studied with her for a year. And then in the second year, she says, okay, now we're going to prepare you to audition for Juilliard. Okay. So, you know, when I sang the Star Spangled Banner at graduation, oh, that's a funny story. It was outdoors. They wanted me to use a microphone. I said, but I don't use a microphone. So I'm standing, you know, like this far away from the microphone, right? And I blew it out. And people at the graduation said, why were you using a microphone? You know, people think whatever they think. Anyway, so I get into Juilliard. So in my studio, my voice teacher studio, there were five people in the class. Five. And there was one other teacher with five. So 10 people were accepted, right? And so did a concert, a recital in my end of my senior year, and I go to Oberlin to pursue my singing. And I ended up double majoring with German studies. I knew I'd be singing in German. And art history became a passion of mine. I love art. And I minored in art history. They had a great museum at Oberlin. Great. The Allen Museum. Great, great art. Great collection. And then after there's another story there too. So remember when I was talking about the weight loss? So between my sophomore and junior year, no, my freshman and sophomore year of college, I lost 55 pounds and it affected my voice. So come sophomore jury, I decide that my German teacher said, wow, you have a really good ear for German. Do you want to go study in Vienna? We have a German immersion program for the summer. So I go and I passed three and failed three in my sophomore jury after losing the weight. Once again, the technique was really connected to this fluctuating weight. So I decide I'm going to go double major in German. And that's what had me. And I did my senior recital was all in German. So that was kind of fun. And then I moved back to New York and kept studying because I really had the vision, I'm going to be an opera singer and sing all over the world. It's always been part of my gift. You know, like we're all given gifts. I was given the gift of an unusual voice that could have had a career. Anyway,
but
so that's the Juilliard Oberlin and back.
Didn't you sing over there? Because the video that I was watching, you were singing over in Europe, right?
No, I didn't sing over there. I auditioned.
Oh.
Yeah, no, that was here. That was the end of June. That was my most recent concert that
okay.
I did
oh.
here. And yeah, so basically what I've done is I find people who are willing to sing who want exposure, and I try to provide exposure. And by renting spaces and renting the live stream, people who do the live stream, you know, there's a lot to do to put together productions. And
so
we did an hour and a half program.
So you were never actually in
Right.
an opera. You were never actually in an opera production despite the auditions.
Oh yeah. No, I've sung not in Europe. I've sung about 13 roles, the full roles. Like I did sing Die Walküre, which is the second opera in that ring that I talked about, the Ring of the Nibelungens. So I did it with Liederkranz. I got a grant from the Wagner Society in that year, and I learned the Brunhilde, and I did two productions of Die Walküre at two different places. And I've sung, you know, oh Lord, I've sung a lot of opera. I've sung Tosca. I've sung Aida. I've sung my first full opera with orchestra was La Traviata by Verdi, which is not my Fach, which is a Fach is like a genre of voice, the type of voice. So normally it's sung by a lighter, higher voice, but I could sing it. And the person who was putting on the production wanted me to do it. So I did it. And I've sung Trovatore. I've sung Nabucco. I've sung a lot of different operas.
So, all right. So hold on. So you said you didn't have a career. You have had a career.
I wasn't paid. I wasn't paid. Yeah, it was not a paid big career on big stages. It was mostly small stages and here and there. You know, I sang in Mexico that Traviata. I think I was 27 when I sang there. And the guy, one of the conductors who was Mexican, he wanted a famous singer to sing the Violetta. And my person said, no, Meryl is singing it. And he's another one of those people. I think I was 27 or 28, I think, at the time. And that guy was a pretty famous Mexican conductor. And he was like, no, she's not going, you know. And I sang it. And then it was, again, one of those, oh, wow, she really did deliver. She delivered, you know, that she really sang it. So, you know, it's happened any number of times where, you know, I'll be singing and I really get into the role and I really get into being present in the moment on the stage. And these are things that I think have set me apart in performance. Hmm. And sometimes when you're auditioning, you know, you have to take a minute. And just like any audition, you have to get into character like that, right? So, and often it would be in a small room, and often it would be, you'd wait for a half an hour to audition. So since the past, so I put together a production of Cavalleria Rusticana last April, and I went and found people to do a small chorus, and I went to Manhattan School of Music, and I had these kids who were so happy studying opera at Manhattan School here in New York, and they were so grateful to be able to get up on a stage and perform. And so I noticed that that's important to me, to give people opportunities to sing. So somebody I worked with has now helped me vocally. So if I had had these vocal exercises when I was young, and let me tell you, I studied with a lot of teachers, and everybody wanted me to do something different. You know, oh, you should sing this repertoire. No, you should sing that repertoire. And he's given me vocalises that they're really helping me to balance my voice and be more consistent. So it's just been, you know, when you're given a gift and you think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Now, I'm very grateful that after college, after Oberlin, I went to secretarial school. So in 1977, when I graduated, we didn't have computers, we had typewriters, right? So I took typing lessons, right? Now everybody types, typing lessons, and I took Greg shorthand, which I still can do a little bit of. That set me apart to get a job working for high-level executives who want to dictate. Right. Mm. So I get, my first job, full-time job, was at the Metropolitan Opera. And I worked for six guys as a secretary, six guys. And we ran, it was the house management staff and the house manager. And then I went to work at the Metropolitan Opera Guild for the president. And the guild would do events and educational. They were, you know, it's very, they did Opera News, produced Opera News. So now the Guild is gone. The funding dried up. The Guild is gone. They incorporated some of the functions that the Guild used to do into the Metropolitan Opera Association, which is part of the reason why it's important that we have funding for the Met. So, you know, become a member. Become a member of the Met. And, you know, really get to see what comes out of watching an opera. Now, there are certain operas I wouldn't go to as your first opera. No. You want to go to a standard, yummy, delicious La Boheme, La Traviata, Carmen, you know, something that has tunes, you know, so you can there have melodies. And Tosca, I sang Tosca, great opera to go to at the beginning. And there are certain operas that are just can be very long. Those Wagner operas, very long, not for everybody, especially at the beginning. I did everything. Hillary, I was a plus size model to make money to pay for my lessons. So I worked in an office. I would go on a lunch hour after work, and I would do a little plus size modeling. And in that day, it wasn't a, you know, generic word. It was like the beginning of time when we had plus size modeling. And a friend of mine was a model, and she said, you know, you ought to look at modeling. You'd be really good. So I did. And, you know, as singers, artists, and any musicians, many people can't afford to live. So they take on multiple jobs.
It's, all right. Question.
That's what we do.
Question.
Okay, question.
Because, you know, for you, I keep hearing that you're saying you didn't have a career. You did have a career, and it looked the way it looked. And it didn't look the way maybe you thought it should look. But you did have a career. You're still bringing opera to people. You're still putting on these shows. You're taking these students and giving them a chance. You know, you're now going to do this amazing fundraiser and sing at the Met. So you do have a career. And you are bringing it to people in the way that you're bringing it. But it might not have looked like you wanted it to back when you were a child. But I would like to tell you, you have had a career. You're still passionate about it. You're still unstoppable. You're still pursuing your dream. And it's not nothing. It's not. It's really not.
It's not nothing. No, it's not nothing.
How many people actually make it? How many people, besides like the Pavarottis and stuff, can support themselves on an opera career? How many? And I'm not saying that you shouldn't have, but
1%, 2%, very few.
Yeah. So it's not like, you know, it's not like you quit. It's not like you stopped. You had your challenges. Who knows why? You had bamboo nodes and parasites and weight, you know, fluctuations and all that. And yet most people would have stopped. I think most people would have given up.
Yeah, but you were unstoppable. Yeah, thank you.
And
that's one of my big messages. Really, be unstoppable. It really is. I'm going to reiterate it. I think that I have a lot of gifts. I'm not just a voice. I have a lot of gifts to be with people, to appreciate people, to acknowledge people for what their gifts are, and to encourage and empower people. So that they can see that their gift matters, and to really be unstoppable. And if I can bring that message, like I have young, great nieces and nephews, and, you know, it's so funny. One of my great nieces, she's 5 and a half now. So last year when I did the Cavalleria Rusticana, I love that opera. That's another good opera to go to. It's very passionate. And it's a shorter opera. So for some people, they don't want to go to a long opera, you know. So the Cavalleria Rusticana is one of those that, anyway, so she says to me, she watches me at the doing the opera on live stream there in Colorado. And she says, Auntie Momo, how come you're so sad? So I said, Oh, well, it's not that I'm sad. You know, like when you watch a movie or a TV show and somebody say it's like a character in the movie, that's not me, Mer Momo. That's the character is sad, right? Well, but if the fact that my niece is actually having my great nieces sit and watch opera at this age, it's like, you know, when you learn young, there's something about bringing language, even languages, you know, study languages, study music, study art, see what resonates, see what, you know, what speaks to your heart, what's, you know, what moves you, what's empowering you. And if you find people that empower you, you know, hang around with them. So, you know, Hillary, you know, I've done many self-development transformational types of courses. And I know when I was sick with that parasite thing and I could barely move, part of how I got through it was really creating a possibility for my life. Every day I woke up, I had to go to work, I had to do this. Every day I created, who am I going to be today? What possibility can I generate in this wacky body that hurts so much? And if I can inspire people to really, you know, create that for themselves. Just like when I sing, if people are moved and they actually say, I'm so moved, I didn't know, thank you, then I get to be grateful and I get to say, I did my job. I did my job. I made people be impacted by music and by emotion. So, you know, that's kind of who I am and what I'm up to. And if people really want to keep opera alive in the world and are willing to come partner with me, because to create a project like this, to have a fundraiser at the Metropolitan Opera, you know, generally when they have fundraisers, they do things like acknowledge people who have made a huge contribution to the Met already. So there's something going on, I think maybe in the next week or two, and they're honoring a big patron who's given a lot of money to the Met. And but for somebody like this kind of a fundraising product, it will take a village. It'll take a lot of people to put together production like this. And so if you have ideas, if you excel, if anybody excels in marketing, in advertising, in production, you know, if anybody has these gifts, time out.
No,
Yes,
we're
question.
almost done. We're like wrapping up in 15 seconds, so.
Oh, sorry. Okay, well, anyway, they
We
can reach
will
out
give
to me.
you, we will give you the phone number and the email to contact Meryl. And just one last sentence in closing, 5 years from now, and very quickly, where do you see the world, given your commitment?
Well, 5 years from now, I see that people are finding their joy and their passion and they're pursuing it. And 5 years from now, humanity is connected and talking to one another because music and opera have brought them together, connected, empowered, and thriving. That's what I see.
Beautiful, beautiful.
And
Thank you so much.
the arts are thriving. The arts are thriving.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so
Thank
much, Meryl, for
you.
your
Thank you for
gift.
this great opportunity.
Yeah, just beautiful. You do have a career. You are a gift. It might not have looked like the way you thought it would, but you are a star. So thank you. Thank you for being here with us.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you. Thank you. And I'm getting my tissue out again.
All right. Thanks,
Thank you.
everyone. See you next week.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.